Microaggressions in everyday life, race, gender, and sexual orientation. What is microaggression? I told you guys, you're going to learn about it. Darrell Wing Sue is with us right now to do just that. Welcome to WVON. You're a psychologist at Columbia University. When I saw this breakdown, we talk about discrimination, and obviously it's something we've been talking about for a long time because there's a lot of it in America. I saw this, the title of your book, and I thought this is must be a different angle to analyze because, Professor, there's some traditional ways to analyze discrimination, right? And then microaggression a non-traditional way?
It's a different way of looking at it. Microaggressions, for your listeners, are the brief and commonplace, you know, daily verbal, behavioral, environmental insults, put-downs, slights, indignities that people of color, women, and gay lesbians experience in their day-to-day interactions with well-intentioned, good, moral, decent individuals who are unaware that they are putting us down and doing great psychological harm.
You know, in the African-American community, we have this common saying where we say sometimes white folks don't realize when they're being, you know, discriminatory. And that's what you're talking about when you say the unintended slights that take their toll on people who are being discriminated against.
That is correct. One of the things that I try to get people to realize, especially white brothers and sisters, to understand is that we are all victims of a cultural conditioning process that instills within us the biases, the stereotypes, the assumptions of human behavior. And this operates on an unconscious level. You know, most people experience themselves as good, moral, decent people, and it is hard for them to realize that they have hidden biases that come out in unfortunate situations that hurt and harm people. In fact, I make a strong point that that the oppressive experiences that people of color experience from well-intentioned individuals are more harmful than that comes from the overt white supremacist, the racist, the skinhead, or Klan members. I mean, I don't want to meet them in a darkened alley by myself, but, you know, they have less to do with affecting the quality and standard of my life than ordinary folks do who don't know the harm that they're, imposing upon all of us.
Now, that sounds very similar to Dr. King saying in the 60s when he came to Chicago, he came to Chicago and he saw the overt racism that existed in Chicago. And he said, Chicago scares me, but I would rather that because I know where the racists stand. He said, in the South, they kind of befriend you a little bit and make you feel good, and then you don't know that the racism is coming in and blindsiding you. That's sort of like what you're talking about here.
Yes, it is. In fact, almost all the studies indicate that, for example, that African Americans are better able to deal with the deliberate, overt racist behaviors and acts on people than the subtle, unintentional, hidden forms in which you have to kind of dance around to understand what's going on. Maya Angelou has a good analysis of this. She likens these microaggressions to what she calls small murders in relationship to what she calls the grand execution, which is the what comes from hate crimes, but the small murders, the small cuts of everyday life. You know, we've heard that statement, death by a thousand cuts. They're cumulative and very impactful upon people. So the Reverend King really has, you know, far in advance of a lot of social scientists, saw what was going on.
Now, what about gender discrimination? Of course, we've talked about this for a very long time as well. The glass ceiling still exists. I'm sure women would make the argument. How do you analyze microaggression toward women?
Well, you know, one of the microaggressions, almost, first of all, almost any socially devalued group, marginalized group, like women, LGBTs, racial ethnic minorities, people with disabilities, major class differences experience microaggressions. For women, they follow certain dominant stereotypes that they're less capable, that their role is in the home. And they, in the world of work, for example, women refer to them not so much in terms of microaggressions, but micro inequities. They describe this pattern of being disrespected, ignored, and invisible to their male colleagues. And in our studies, when we interviewed women managers, what they say is that they can be seated in a predominantly all male meeting. They'll make a statement, and it's the CEO that totally ignores it. Their male colleague, John, makes the identical statement, and the CEO will say something like, "Excellent comment, John. Let's run with that idea." This is something that women talk about quite frequently, that they are invisible, and as a result, they don't get that promotion. They're not regarded as being competent and capable, and they experience this invisible glass ceiling that prevents them from rising in the world of work.
When you look at analyze companies that you may recognize gender discrimination, would you also more than likely see racial discrimination as well? Do they kind of go hand in hand?
Yes, you find, yes, exactly that. People of color also experience the glass ceiling, and it's because the institutions, the business and industries have programs, policy structures that are very monocultural. They favor one portion of the working population, but they disadvantage women, were employees of color from being hired, from being retained, and from being promoted. And that monocultural basis has the overarching flavor of both gender, racial discrimination, or I shouldn't say discrimination, I should say bias that results in discrimination.
All right, psychologist Daryl Wing Su is our guest, author as well, the book entitled Microaggressions in Everyday Life, Race, Gender, and Sexual Orientation. I've got to flip this around a little bit, though, to be fair, because if there are unintended discriminations that we see, these microaggressions toward people of color, women, gay, lesbian, transgender, does it go back the other way around? Do people of color discriminate against white folks as well without intending to do so?
Well, you know, the answer to that in a straightforward way is yes. But I always, there's even what we call inter-ethnic microaggressions that can occur. For example, it's very possible that Asian Americans can microaggress blacks, that blacks against Asians or against Latinos, Hispanics. I think the point that I really want to make is that that microaggressions from disempowered groups that do not have the systemic power of society has less harm and effect than when they come from a group or organization that has power. And this goes back to the statement that that the filmmaker Spike Lee makes a very controversial statement that is indeed true. And I know some of your listeners will have their buttons pushed when they hear this, but Spike Lee says, in essence, that only whites can be racist. He is not saying that blacks do not discriminate against whites, but black Americans do not have the systemic power to impose their value standards upon another group. And so he makes, and I do make this distinction, that yes, discrimination, bias, stereotyping goes across all groups, but the most harmful one comes from a systemic bias that is evident oftentimes in our society.
All right, now I'm really way over my head with bringing this next caller on. Dr. Carl Bell is listening to the show and called in. Now I really feel like
hey,
I don't
Carl, know. How are you?
Very good. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Good, good. Glad you got this book out.
Thank you.
No, you know, this is excellent. This is a great conversation, and you couldn't have it better on your show, because he's done a lot of work, a lot of research, and it's nice that we're finally getting to this level of detail about a very, very serious problem that eats away at the self-esteem of people of color in these very little subtle microaggressions, microinsults that detract from people's time, mobility, energy, and space. And then if you say something about it, if you call a white person on it, they say, why are you people so sensitive? And you walk away feeling worse. It's a very fascinating topic.
Yeah, it's a no-win situation. When people of color react to a microaggression, the perpetrator, in this case, let's say it's a well-intentioned white individual, can't see it, and they pathologize the response that comes from the target. For example, black women oftentimes tell me that they are labeled the angry black woman when they express discontent at a microaggression that occurs to them. But Carl, you know, here's the thing. First of all, I just want to acknowledge that this concept of racial microaggression comes from Chester Pierce in the 1970s. You know, so it is not something that that I've created and invented. He started it. This idea. What I've done is try to develop a taxonomy of it.
You've done a good job.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
I've got a question for both of you gentlemen. When we come back, I don't know if Dr. Bell can hold on, but when we come back, I want to ask: do you see this kind of microaggression within races? Do we kind of practice this discrimination within the African-American community, within a Hispanic community, within the Asian community on each other? We'll be right back after this, 850 on WVON.
Time for these step kids to take a time out in the corner. Sequoia Kennedy has traffic and weather coming right up on the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
Is reality radio.
TLC was the hottest female group of the 90s, and they sold millions of albums. As a matter of fact, T-Boz was recently on television telling everybody how great their record company was to them.
TLC had generated on Crazy Sexy Cool $75 million, and they gave us $50,000 apiece. I was like, what the heck?
Okay, let's do the math. Three members of TLC at $50,000 equals $150,000.
Profit for the record company, $74,850,000.
Now this is one of the same record companies who want us to pay them to play their artists. We cannot continue to reward record companies who continue to profit from the hard work of their employees, the recording artists.
You know, we was like really working hard for this money, yes. And we want to know who the hell had our check.
We all now know who had and who has your money. We need your help. Email, call, text your representative and tell them not to allow the performance tax to pass.
They did give us some money, but they still took it back and recouped it. But it's all good. You live and learn in the business.
This is Reality Radio with Kathy Hughes. What's your reality?
What's your reality?
What's your reality?
What's your reality?
It's 8:52 on the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON. Time for your traffic and weather together. This traffic report is brought to you by National City, now a part of PNC. It's easy to achieve your goals with National City Home Equity Solutions. Stop by your local National City branch or call 1-800-622-7083 to discuss our great rates and which option is right for you. Credit subject to approval, equal housing lender. Traffic is heavy out there on the expressways. To give you the update, if you're traveling on the Stevenson inbound, there's stop-and-go traffic between 1st Avenue and Ketzie. On the Ryan inbound, you'll have to slow down between
131st Street and the Circle. If you're traveling on the Bishop Wood Freeway, inbound traffic is stop and go between 115th Street and I-57. And on Lakeshore Drive northbound, there's stop and go traffic between I-55 and Babel Drive. On Lakeshore Drive southbound, you'll need to slow down between Montrose Avenue and Fullerton Parkway. As far as our weather, we'll have partly sunny skies, our high near 47 degrees. Tonight, partly cloudy, the low around 34. Right now, it's 42 degrees at O'Hare. It's 43 over at Midway, and it's 43 degrees at the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
Become an official Matt and Perry Facebook fan. Go to the Matt and Perry personality page on WVON.com and click on Become a Fan.
All right, we're back. It is 8:53 on the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON. Dr. Daryl Dwayne Sue from Columbia University. Dr. Carl Bell has called in to join us. What about my last question to you guys? Do we see these microaggressions within races?
Let me let Dr. Bell start.
Of course you do. But the difference, again, is at the level of power. You know, people of color don't have the same level of power. And so the impact of such behavior is minimal. Everybody stereotypes. Everybody makes assumptions about people. Because there was another black psychiatrist, Charles Pennant Hughes, who wrote about the natural tendency for people to stereotype. But the difference is, if you have power, systemic power, that stereotype can cause huge destruction on a group. And people of color don't have that huge level of power.
You know, Professor, you said used the term taxonomy before you left. Taxonomy of microaggressions. What is that?
Well, it's a means of trying to categorize the types of microaggressions that occur. We've identified three types: what we call micro assaults, which is very similar to the old-fashioned type of racism. They're usually deliberate, conscious. You know, calling someone a Jap, a chink, slant eye, you know, are micro assaults. Micro insults and micro invalidations are the two other types of microaggressions. And in both of these, they are less likely to be consciously or intentionally delivered. Someone, a micro invalidation might be someone who asks me or someone who compliments me for speaking good English.
Right.
I've had that constantly happen. And the hidden message that is delivered to me, you know, I usually respond by saying, thank you, I hope so, I was born here.
Right.
But the unconscious message is that I am a perpetual foreigner in my own country, and I am not a true American. Now, the person delivering the micro-invalidation doesn't realize, they think they're complimenting me. But what a meta-communication, a communication that is unconsciously delivered, is a worldview that is that they hold, that Asians are not a part of this country. And for all my life, I've experienced this. And I know that many of my Latino brothers and sisters experience similar types of, you know, deliveries to them as well.
You know, it's almost like describing Barack Obama saying he's very articulate.
That was Joe Biden saying that. You know, and here is another thing about why this is so. Joe Biden has been a person for civil rights, for human rights. He has fought on behalf of people of color and legislation, and even he mm-hmm. is the victim of a cultural conditioning that makes him unaware of his delivery, because he thought that, well, actually the exact statement was that Barack Obama is bright, articulate, clean-looking,
right.
On and on. And my thought is that, I mean, there's never been African-Americans who are bright, articulate,
right.
and clean and nice-looking. I mean, this belies a hidden worldview that is so damaging to people of color.
You know, Matt, the other issue that Dr. Pierce talks about is how microaggressions and microinsults, how they put African Americans, people of color, off balance. And it confuses them because they're not sure whether they're being accepted or tolerated by Caucasian people, mm-hmm. whether they should fight it and say something about it. And so it creates a lot of confusion in black people because it's not overt. It's not something that you can actually, you know, very clearly identify as being a hostile thing. And so that it's interesting how much mental energy gets used mm-hmm. by people of color when they're around white people in this country with that very issue.
We're going to have both of you gentlemen on again because this was a surprise. Dr. Bell called in and Dr. Sue, really.
It's surprising to me as well.
I know. And plus, I want to get you back on, Dr. Sue, to talk about what was it like being Chinese American and growing up in Portland. I'm sure that's a story all on its own.
Yes.
Dr. Carl Bell, Dr. Derald Wing Sue, guys, thanks for coming on with us this morning.
Okay, thank you.